Warning, the SwampSwamiSports.com podcast is rated M for mature audiences. If you're under the age of 50, you probably won't get most of his bad jokes and puns.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Swamp Swami Podcast, and now here's the star of your show, Swamp Swami! Yay!
Happy Father's Day. Remember to be your best dad. This Sunday's going to be kind of tough for me. In addition to being Father's Day, June 16th is also the same day when I lost my own dad back in 2001 at the age of 75. Dad had a heart attack while mowing the yard at 2 p.m. in the afternoon heat of North Louisiana. My mom, as was expected, became frantic. She told me that my dad would, of course, be driving the car himself to take the two of them to the hospital. Yep. My dad, the one with the heart attack, drove himself to the hospital. So I raced over there to join them that afternoon. Since it was June 2001, George W. Bush had recently become president of the United States and Dick Cheney was the vice president. I remember that Dick Cheney was somewhat famous for having survived a number of heart surgeries. The former vice president, who was a longtime smoker, as was my dad, unfortunately, had undergone heart surgeries back in 1978 at the age of 37, then again in 84, 1988, 2000, and again in March 2001. The emergency room doctor came in to tell us that Dad's heart would indeed need a stent procedure immediately. Remembering that Dick Cheney had recently come through some similar heart surgery with flying colors, I tried to lighten the mood with a little ER humor as the hospital staff prepared to wheel him off. I said, "Don't worry, Dad. Dick Cheney has these done all the time." Well, my dad gave me that dad look, you know what it is, and my joke, as usual, fell flat. Sadly, those were the last words I ever did say to my father as he died within the next day after having complications from that heart surgery. So this Sunday is Father's Day, and it marks the 23rd anniversary of my own dad's passing. But now I'd like to salute some of my neighborhood sports dads. Our baby boom neighborhood in Shreveport, Louisiana, was filled with hundreds of young families. Many of those dads used their GI loans from World War II to make a down payment on that house and purchase one of hundreds of these brand new but relatively small houses in a very fast-growing neighborhood. With a full-time job in the retail sector, my own dad had to work downtown 6 days a week. By the time he finally arrived home in the evening, he didn't have enough time to coach our youth sports teams. But he loved watching sports on television. Dad would come occasionally outside in the backyard with me for a game of pitch or to shoot some hoops at the backyard basketball goal. Fortunately, some of my own best friends' fathers had sales-related jobs where they could go out and help coach the neighborhood kids in the youth recreational leagues. My youth football, basketball, and baseball teams were all coached by neighborhood dads. All of these gentlemen are now deceased, but I fondly remember and appreciate them to this day. Let's meet Coach Robbie, my football coach. Coach Robbie was the sixth grade football coach. I didn't get to play football in the fifth grade because my appendix had to be removed a few weeks before our practice started. Unfortunately, that sixth grade football team was a real stinker. Our record? 0-7-1. And that tie game was a 0-0 defensive struggle. Yours truly was assigned to play the defensive end position on the football team that year. And as a defensive end, Coach Robbie emphatically implored me that I must always keep the other team's running back forced into the interior of the line so that the other players could help make the tackle. My job was not to allow anyone, I mean anyone, to get around me on the defensive end, because if I failed, the other team might be able to score an easy touchdown. You know, that was really solid advice. In what was becoming a lifelong bad habit, though, I should have paid a little bit closer attention and listened to Coach Robbie. In a 36-0 drubbing by the league champion South Highlands, their sneaky wing tee offense made me look like a fool on more than one occasion. When it appeared as if the opposing quarterback was handing off the ball to his fullback right up the middle, I would creep in from my defensive end position to assist in making the tackle. Unfortunately, that sneaky quarterback was setting me up for massive failure. A few plays later, that quarterback pulled the ball back from the belly of that first runner, and then he slyly pitched it to a second running back who was coming sideways across the backfield and right toward my now vacant defensive end spot. My over-pursuit left a gaping hole on my side of the defensive line. It was big enough to run that proverbial truck through. More than one touchdown in that evening's rout was caused by my defensive lapses. Yes, I was very embarrassed, and still am. Those youth football years came during the glory seasons of Coach Vince Lombardi and the Green Bay Packers. Much like that legendary football leader, Coach Robbie projected toughness to his players. He had little use for personal excuses, especially those coming from that hard-headed, underperforming defensive end. It was a struggle to keep his 15 or 20 kids paying attention during that late summer heat. If we had a particularly lackluster practice, Coach Robbie then ended the football practice with the admonition to take another lap around that old oak tree. Though the trek, wearing full pads and a helmet, felt like miles, the round trip was actually more about the length of a lap around a high school track, or about a quarter mile. As an adult, I went back there and looked at that route and then laughed about it. It sure seemed like forever to me as a sixth grader. Tony Orlando and Dawn came along in 1973 and had a hit song called Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Oak Tree. Upon hearing that song for the first time, I broke into a cold sweat hearing the phrase, Old Oak Tree. I conjured up some bad memories about that sixth grade football team as Coach Robbie was ordering us to hit the trail one last time. Now, I never really cared much for Tony Orlando after that either. Now let's talk about Mr. C, the basketball coach. Mr. C was our primary youth basketball coach in the fifth and sixth grade. Unlike our hapless football team, our basketball teams were exceptional. We won the city championships both of those years. Mr. C was a man of great patience and a fine teacher of basketball fundamentals. At that age, youth basketball final scores were usually on the order of something like 12-7 or 9-6. If a team could break that 20-point barrier during a youth basketball game, your team was pretty good. And we were. My favorite basketball drill back then was the layup line. You know, one side dribbled the ball and attempted the layup, and the other side went to go get the rebound and pass it over to the next shooter. And that process was done, though, from both sides of the basket. While dribbling and shooting layups from the left side of the basket, Coach C would tell us to shoot the basketball using our left hand. Well, we had a team full of right-handed players, so that wasn't very easy. But he told us that opponents would have trouble blocking our shot if we used our left hand on that side of the basket. So like all the guys on the team, I struggled at first with using my left hand, but just kept on working on it. And as the years passed, I discovered that my left hand was actually quite helpful in dribbling the basketball. By the time I was playing high school basketball, I was using my left hand as part of my signature move to create an open shot for myself. You see, most right-hand shooters tend to dribble with their right hand too. So I, as a right-handed shooter, would fake to my right side and then quickly take one or two dribbles in the other direction using my now proficient left hand. The opponent fell for this neat little trick almost 100% of the time and left me with a wide open jump shot. So thank you, Mr. C, for getting my left hand involved in basketball starting in the fifth grade. Now let's talk about Mr. J, the baseball coach. Mr. J was good enough to have played professional baseball, finishing his career with our hometown Shreveport Sports. That was like the AA level. And he played first base. And guess who played first base back in the fifth and sixth grade for Mr. J's team? Yep, yours truly. I was a bit intimidated trying to play our coach's former defensive position as well. Though I tried hard, that kid with the Buddy Holly glasses at first base, me, never felt very comfortable as a ground ball would take that bad hop toward me and my specs. Fortunately, Mr. J's son was the team's pitcher, so my mediocre play at first base was often overlooked. Just like basketball, our youth baseball teams were very good too. Mr. J would stress fundamentals as he somehow remained patient enough to help us improve our own skills over the course of each of those seasons. We also had a field of dreams, like a golf version. Let me explain. I was one of the best friends of Mr. J's oldest son. We both loved playing golf when we weren't playing other sports. Around the age of 12, we decided we were going to build our own 3-hole par 3 golf course, without parental consent, of course. I absconded with my family's push mower and took it across the road to a nearby parcel of undeveloped land owned by a local industrial developer. We both walked off the yardage for each of the hole locations, about 100 to 125 yards apiece. And then over the next 2 days, we took turns mowing a triangular trio of golf holes and finally accomplished our mission. Thankfully, I did not ruin my dad's lawnmower in the process and was not arrested by the local police for trespassing. At age 12, I had zero idea that mowing someone else's field might have been a crime. As long as no cars were being hit by our stray golf balls, we never heard a peep out of any adults. They were probably too busy laughing at us as they drove by in their cars. Apparently, Mr. J, though, took notice of how committed we had become to playing golf. So he reciprocated by taking me along with him and his son to play a few rounds of golf at the city's public golf course. He later allowed me to tag along with them a few times at the local country club. By the time I was finally able to drive the family car at age 16, I had become a pretty good golfer. Mr. J's willingness to allow me to tag along on several of these golf outings taught me a lot about golf courses and the proper etiquette. Those early on-course experiences deepened my growing interest in the game as I've remained a lifelong golfer. So happy Father's Day! I tried to be supportive during my own two sons' early sports endeavors. By junior high school, though, both of these smart young men had wisely transitioned into learning how to become exceptional musicians. They had a lot more fun, too. They also earned more college scholarship money from their musical talents than dear old Dad did, zero, from his years of playing sports. Though most of us will never measure up to Ward Cleaver or Sheriff Andy Taylor or other famous TV dads, it's important for us dads to simply spend as much time as possible with our kids and grandkids. I recently learned that my friend from this story, Mr. J's son, passed away in April. He left behind two of his own kids. And on Father's Day, I hope that his two kids will share a few of the lighter moments remembering their dad and a few fun stories about him. So set your best example for your kids and grandkids while you still can, dads. The memories will last a lifetime. I'm Swamp Swami.